Blog Talk Radio. Father, make light my prayer and strong my faith. Swift my feet and sure my hand to carry your will to the ends of the earth and spread the good news of your love through the land. Make peaceful the night and bright the day, with angels calling the rising suns. Now high is the road and clear is the way. Presence has just begun. Oh, that the one who has caused the earth to turn and the stars in their crowning glory to bless the skies with a kingly prize could stay so near to my praying. Father, make strong my heart to know your love and assure my faith to stand on, holding the earth in the palm of your hand. We are your faith-bound children.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio, The Cosmic Citizen. If it's Saturday morning, it must be The Cosmic Citizen. And I am here with French-speaking women who very, very dearly, and I want to say that with beautiful voice of Francil Gowron on a cappella prayer. I thought it would be the perfect thing to open up today's show with, because you have with you three faithful women who and devoted women who want to help heal the world. And in all sincerity, I don't think I've ever met two women more absolutely desirous of helping other people find health and harmony and happiness in the whole being, body, mind, and spirit, than Brigitte Mars and Diane Labrette. Our special guest today is Brigitte Mars. Brigitte is a true flower child in the truest sense of the word. She has lived in nature. She's an expert in herbology. Natural raw food chef, local Boulder health guru, and celebrity, world teacher, teaches all over the world about herbs and natural medicines and the health and harmony and care of the body human, as does Diane. So I'm just so honored to have you both on with me today. And Brigitte, are you with us?
I am here.
So good to hear your beautiful voice.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh yeah, it's such an honor to have you on. And Diane, or Diane, as it is said in French, is here with us from Montreal. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Paula. Good morning, beautiful Brigitte.
So
it's really nice to be with all of you.
Thank
Très
you.
Enchantée, ma chère.
I want to, first of all, give our call-in number for folks, because this is a great opportunity for our listeners to talk to two women who are just absolute experts in human health and happiness and care. So if you want to call in, 646-716-8158. Brigitte, tell us, what are you up to right now? I know you've got so many irons in the fire.
It's true. Thank you. My new book, The Sexual Herbal, just came out, And I'm working on another book on country folk remedies. My grandmother, who was French-Canadian, that's why I learned to speak French, not nearly as well as Diane, but I get to practice with her from time to time. But yesterday I spoke at a press conference on helping to stop herbicide spraying. You know, as Urantians, we really need to step up to the plate and take care of this planet Urantia, take care of our bodies and take care of our planet. And, you know, the time to be green or whatever we're doing for the environment, we just need to step it up and carry it further. And so, you know, this is a message for, you know, all people that live on this planet. When we read the news or hear the press, it's sad. And, you know, God is our father, the universe is our mother. And we need to be respectful in the choices that we make with what we buy and how what we put into our bodies and what we put on our planet. So I'm all about that.
I'm all about, yeah. And you are, it's true. You really devote your entire self and being and time, all that you are, to that. And it's just such an amazing thing to me. And, you know, for me it's about systems and the health of systems. And within every system is multiple systems. And within the body is a perfect example of the different systems, the cardiovascular system, the, you know, digestive system, all of the systems, the nervous system within the body. And as the part, so goes the whole. So if each person is a transformed person, then they will help to transform that the system that they are in. And then as we transform the systems of, you know, the community, the state, the country, the world, and, you know, we can just heal by an outward radiance, but not if we aren't healed ourselves, not if we aren't well.
And I do believe it's easier for God to work through us more easily if we can feel good in our bodies. And I was very influenced by reading the Adam and Eve papers and reading that, you know, though cooking was widely employed outside the garden, Adam and Eve, they took their food, sun ripened, they did not cook their food, they lived off of fruits and nuts and grains as they ripened, and they also imbibed, I like this part, certain space emanations. So, you know, I think that we need to, there's a lot of wisdom in the Urantia book about, you know, health and healing. You know, Jesus healed the sick. And it's not all just about being healthy. It's about so we can be spiritually receptive. You know, the mission wasn't just to be a body on this planet. It's so that we can evolve and ascend.
Mm. It's so true what you're saying, Brigitte. I'm looking at the Urantia book, and it says in paper 130 that when Jesus was talking, he ended one of his speech, and he says, farewell, my lad. Be of good courage as you grow up to manhood. And after you have fed the body, learn also how to feed the soul. So you see, you know, a beautiful harmony between the two. Learn to feed the body and then learn to feed the soul. And I would go as far as to say that, you know, you can grow your soul the way you grow your body. And if you, I'm sure you will agree, Brigitte, that the more we look at people interested in growing in spirit or spiritually, the more they become self-respectful of their body. They go into organic food, they go into yoga, they go into meditation, they go into quality restaurants, they go into quality. It's a whole thing. It's an ensemble. It's not just one thing you do and then you do crappy stuff for the rest, you know. It goes together.
And we vote with our dollars. So when we say, oh, yeah, I don't care, I'm going to buy that cereal with artificial color in it for my kids, we're voting to keep those kind of companies going. And we really need to say, this is what I choose to support with my money. I want to support the companies that are doing something. And we can't all, you know, we can't take on every cause necessarily. For some of us, it's, you know, the rainforest. For some of us, it's indigenous people. For some, it's, you know, the whales, the dolphins. And I do realize that this is, you know, our temporal place, and that you know, it is natural for things to go extinct. My husband, Tom Pfeiffer, likes to joke, well, personally, I'm glad I don't have a Tyrannosaurus Rex chasing me when I ride my bicycle down the path. I do accept that there's evolution and species do come and still and go, but to leave the Earth a big mess for the future generations, it's just not right. And I could go on and on about that.
Well, you know, I would like to say one thing. Last weekend, I was saying to Paula, who is a very dear friend of mine, Brigitte, I went to see this. I'm a movie buff. I educate myself through movies. And I went to see this movie that came out just last Friday, Oceans. It is a magnificent masterpiece. I invite the whole planet to go see it because it is so, so, so beautiful. It's like an homage to the life carriers. And you go through the whole movie, an hour and a half of fantastic production. I discovered species that we didn't even know we had, you know. They show us. You are totally taken aback by the beauty and the majesty of the movie. And at the end, they have a last quote saying that we must take care of the planet, just like what you said, Brigitte. And they show us a picture of garbage, literally garbage floating on the water. And then they dive deep inside the water, and you see an actual grocery cart. You know, the big, big metal
yes.
grocery cart that when you go to King Supers, I guess is your line of grocery stores, and you take that cart. There's a cart at the bottom of the water, and you see a fish trying to go around and wonder what to do with that strange species. And you go like, God, what mess did we make on this planet, you know? So I totally agree with what you said.
And, you know, just every choice we make, are we going to buy another plastic bottle of water, or are we going to get a bottle that we can refill with water? So it's all the little things, but it is really time to increase our participation. And if whatever we were recycling, recycle more. Can you start a compost bin? And I feel like all of that is like a prayer. All of that is being honorable and respectful to our father and mother. It is part of our spiritual path to be honorable. So that's what I'm my thoughts are.
Beautiful.
You know, Brigitte too, don't I wanna get back to something you were saying too about having a clear system to receive the maximum amount of light coming in. And it
yes.
goes back to a quote in the Urantia book from paper 110, section 6, the seven psychic circles, which to our listeners, if you have never read the Urantia book, the seven psychic circles is always of great interest to anybody who ever reads the book because it's about the incension to the center of the self, the universe of self, to where the center where God resides. And God is at the first great source and center of all things and beings. And so not only is he at the center of the universe of universes, he's also at the center of every human being. And the Urantia book tells us that he's at the center of every automaton, which is he's at the center of every automaton, which is the smallest particle of creation. So, but anyway, this quote is from section 6. It says, lack of spiritual capacity makes it very difficult to transmit to such a material intellect the spiritual truths resident in the higher superconsciousness. It is to the mind of perfect poise, housed in a body of clean habits, stabilized neural energies, and balanced chemical function, when the physical, mental, and spiritual powers are in triune harmony of development, that a maximum of light and truth can be imparted with a minimum of temporal danger or risk to the real welfare of such a being. By such a balanced growth does man ascend the circles of planetary progression one by one, from the seventh to the first. So, you know, I just wanted
that to... That is so profound. Thank you so much. And I want to add something to that that I sometimes say, and I know that God exists in everything, but here's food for thought. What seems closer to God, a fresh picked peach or a bag of fried pork rinds?
You know, I love
like,
it.
Like, you know, one is like, you know, kissed by the sun and the rain and
yes.
the earth, and another one is, you know, made with suffering and heated oils and burning and people that are unhappy working in factories and packaging and preservatives. So thank you so much for that quote. It's so profound. I'm gonna use that in my classes. And I, you know, I teach all around the world, and I'm so glad. I always talk about the Urantia book. You know, it's such an opportunity because, you know, I feel that the Urantia book really, you know, validates, you know, talks about Jesus studied the wildflowers and the stars when he was a child. Well, studying the wildflowers, that's a great thing. Rather than spraying them, learn their names, and you can probably eat them or use them for medicine.
You know, I would like to add something, my friends. Since we're a trinity, we're going to close the triangle. In your beautiful book, Brigitte, that you gave me as a gift and that I keep, I look at every day and I go through this, and I love it. It's called Rawsome, not just awesome, but Rawsome by Brigitte Mars. On page 95, you talk about in the section called Raw Foods Encyclopedia, which I love, by the way, you talk about the benefits of chlorophyll, and I want to say this because I'm so happy that you devoted a whole entire page on the benefits of chlorophyll, and it's totally in line with what you were reading, Paula, the light, you know, and the light helping in the process of photosynthesis and then helping in the creation of chlorophyll. I was just saying, Brigitte, to Paula before we started the show, that I looked in the Urantia book, and they even talk about chlorophyll. And then you talk about the advantage of chlorophyll in your book. And then it reminded me of a book that I bought years ago. Many listeners know about the product called Green Barley. And the author of Green Barley, Yoshihide Ajirara, wrote a book years ago. And it blew my mind when I found out he actually shows the structural formulas, you know, the molecular structure of chlorophyll and human blood. In other words, we could call chlorophyll plant blood and human blood. And I would like to read just a little thing because it goes in line with what you two were saying. He says, my interest in this comparison focuses on the extraordinary similarity between chlorophyll in green leaves and human blood. In chemical structure, chlorophyll and blood would appear to be twins. The only difference is that chlorophyll, or plant blood, contains magnesium in its nucleus, which is bonded in its structure, whereas hemoglobin, or human blood, contains iron. We may well say that the fluid in green leaves or raw food is the blood of grasses or trees. Conversely, I venture to maintain that the green blood can become red blood in man, and in fact it does by, it's a principle called biological transmutation. And so this light that the Urantia book mentions and that you were talking about actually enters the human body through chlorophyll. And what better way than to have it through the food that we eat, especially if it hasn't been adulterated, if it hasn't been broken down so that we don't get only 10 or 20% of its value, but we get closest to the potential of 100%, especially knowing that today 100% of the value of food can be less than what it was years ago because of all the damage we've done, you know. So I'm so for that you you are proning for raw food, Brigitte. It's so great.
Well, chlorophyll, I love it. That's so true what you read, and it is an inspiration. And, you know, so many people are finding, oh, I have low energy, I have iron poor blood, and yet imbibing the green plant juice or even eating green salads every day as a way to get chlorophyll. And the Urantia book says that it was a step in evolution for plants to start making their own food, to produce chlorophyll, and also to produce seeds, because before that, most of the plants, they were spore-bearing. And so, you know, now we have nuts and seeds available, and, you know, seeds are really, really important. I'm actually very skeptical of this tendency to create a lot of seedless foods, like seedless watermelon and seedless grape. I do believe that that is going to be a problem in the future for people's fertility. So in the Urantia book, it says that when Adam and Eve were in the garden, all Adam had to do was look at the animals, and he knew exactly what their nature was. He was able to read the sign of nature, the signature, or like la signatura, the sign of nature, that plants and animals often tell us what they're good for by the way they look and by the way they grow. And I actually know that I just received some email from Paula, and I think it was through Diane, on the signatures, how, you know, carrots look like an eye when they're sliced, and blueberries look like an eye, and cauliflower looks like a brain. One of the things, and, you know, kidney beans, they really are good for the kidneys. Beets and beet juice and borscht really do build the blood. So our Creator left us signs to understand. You know, we've all evolved here on the same planet and the same atmosphere and gravitational force field, and the animals don't need to Google it to see whether it's the right thing to eat or not, or look it up in a book. And, you know, another, you know, big example that has been a wake-up call for me is if you take a raw sunflower seed and plant it, it has the life potential to grow into an 8-foot-tall plant. If you plant a roasted, salted sunflower seed, you could, you know, pray over it and play, you know, raga music and crystals and give it organic fertilizer. Nothing is going to happen. We've killed the life force in our food. And it's interesting that when people feel bad, they often say things like, I'm fried, I'm zapped, I'm burnt, I'm... You know, you're cooked, you're toast, I'm toasted.
That's great.
It usually sounds like something like that's kind of devitalized. And so, you know, I just keep remembering Adam and Eve didn't partake in that. And, you know, so I do realize that cooking has been done throughout history for a lot of different reasons. One was that, you know, people had to light fires to keep the wild animals away. They congregated around the fires. The fires kept them warm. And when people were eating a meat-based diet and they didn't have running water and refrigeration, that, you know, if you had a goat with flies all over it that you were fixing to eat, you would probably be wise in cooking that. But how has that worked for people when so many people suffer and they feel that they need to fight for their lives on this planet and all their energy goes into that? Maybe it's time to look at, you know, a simpler way, getting back to nature so that we can really focus on evolution and caring for others than battling to stay alive. So that little metaphor of the raw sunflower seed, it's something to think about. And, you know, all the animals eat their food raw, and we do have ways today of making food more digestible. I know there's a line somewhere in there about, in the Urantia book, that cooking food made it more digestible, but there are ways to make food more digestible, such as soaking, sprouting, fermenting, marinating, pureeing. So, you know, maybe it's time to move into a new paradigm so that we can move into a higher stage of evolution.
It's so true. You know, when you mentioned about, if you allow me, Paula, I would just like to say this in compliment to what Brigitte said. You were talking about the sunflower seeds. I have a sprouter, an automatic electric sprouter at home, and I marvel every time I make a new batch, because to me it reminds me, it's even a spiritual, it has a spiritual meaning to me. I use sunflower seeds, Brigitte, and they're not 8 feet tall, but I'll tell you, my sprouts are, I have some right now, I'm going to have some for later on today as a salad. They're 8 inches tall. It costs cents to make. And the beauty is that when I grow them and I start with those black seeds that look like, nothing, you know, and just to have the sprinkler go all day long and sprinkling water, the water of life. And I think of the sprouts as being human bodies. And you just leave them a couple of days in darkness, and then a couple of days after, you see they've actually broken open. And then the life force comes out. You take off the lid and you continue to water them for 3-4 days, and they grow, and they become full of life and green. I mean, and what did I find out in medicine? They actually help to feed the brain, a very specific brain of the very specific part of the brain. And so every time you eat it, it goes straight to the brain, to the hormonal system, and it makes you stronger, better, and it tastes fantastic. And I was just discussing with a dear friend of mine here in Quebec, a wonderful man of God, a Urantia book reader, Pierre Routier. And I said, you know, Pierre, the sprouter with the sunflower seeds just reminds me of the spiritual process of the creation of our soul. We, every human being coming on earth, are like a little ball of love in potential. And if throughout our life we water ourselves with the water of life or the spirit of God, we crack open and we create a soul so that we can grow and grow for everlasting life. He said, that's what it is, Diane. I said, you know what? The planet is like a, sprouter, a,
it's like an
not
incubator,
a storehouse.
Like storage chest or something.
Yes, to create souls. And it's on the same principle as our food. Just like when you were talking about, you know, the food that I sent to Paula, to look at the food and you get the meaning of where it goes or whatever. The most impressive one to me is the walnut. When you take a perfectly shaped walnut, it's the perfect shape of the human brain. The right hemisphere, the left hemisphere with the corpus callosum in between. And it's like you're eating a miniature brain to feed your brain.
We have a question from the board, too.
Okay. I want to say one more thing about sunflower before we lose that. Diane, what you said was so profound. Many years ago, I was living in the Virgin Islands, and I was reading in a book about how in the morning, many young sunflowers, they'll face the sunrise. And then in the evening, they'll turn and face the sunset. And I decided at that moment I was pregnant, I said, I'm going to name my child that I'm carrying Sunflower, if it's a girl. And so I have two children, Rainbow and Sunflower. But to me, the sunflower is a representation of eternal life, following the sunrise, following the sunset, and then doing that again. And if you look at the signature of the sunflower, it's a solar collector. It has a very strong stem to hold up a big head, and it's even used as a flower essence, not a Bach flower remedy, but a flower essence to help strengthen the vertebrae. So if someone is having back problems and they go to the health food store and buy a bottle of sunflower flower essence, it will help their chiropractic adjustment, their yoga practice, their osteopathic work to take better. It will help us to receive and have a stronger spine so we can, you know, face the sun.
And it feeds Brigitte, you know, the pituitary gland, like I was saying to you, when we eat it. And what is the function of the pituitary gland? It holds all the functions of the thyroid, all the hormones, you know, the very related with the chakra system as well. So it's all interconnected. It's like a big, beautiful woven fabric. The human fabric is an interwoven connection of factors that are interconnected. And when you harm one, you harm another one indirectly and indirectly and indirectly. But when you strengthen one and indirectly another one and so on. So do we choose life or do we choose death? You know, that's the question.
That's a very simple question, and I think in some ways the world has been obsessed with darkness and death, and it troubles me to see young people wearing black t-shirts with skulls on them and all these symbols of death and darkness, because we want to get to light and life. That's our goal, do we choose life or do we choose death? It just, it comes down to that. It's just that simple. Do we choose something living to ingest or something dead? You know, and I know that, you know, we enjoy our cooked foods and all of that, but there's nothing living in that, just as you pointed out, Brigitte, so beautifully. You can do whatever you want to that seed. It isn't going to grow. Whatever life force was in it is gone, you know. So life adds life. And death, you know, they meet each other equally, you know. Death adds death.
Yet at the same time, I would add something, Paula, you know, if people choose to cook, there is, to me, a respectful way, if I can use that word, to cook food. There is a way. I remember my mom, because we were 12 in the family, so she had to cook in big quantity and a lot every day. But that's one beautiful memory I retained from my mom that she has taught us, and that is she was cooking ever so gently. She was going right above the level of boiling, you know, and she would cook. I still remember in my youth going to bed at night and she would cook like a pot roast or whatever in the oven. She would start it when she would go to bed at 10, 11 at night. It would cook slowly, slowly throughout the night, almost not touching it, you know, barely keeping it warm, and it would cook gently in its own juice. But God, when we would eat that food the next day, we would get up and the house would be filled with the aromas of herbs and this and veggies and so on. And when we would eat it, it almost tasted like it was still full of life, in the sense that it had been cooked with what I call so much respect, as opposed to, like you were saying, Brigitte, you know, like burnt and fry and this. And it's so aggressive, you know, and so people are aggressive. But when you go gently, it's just like when you make an herb tea, you know, in tisane. You go gentle and then you can seep out all the principles, you know. So there are people that will cook food, and the idea is in the way to do it, but it's always a question of consciousness. Do you do it in the rush of days because we're in a society where we so encourage speed and speed and speed so that we do not do things consciously, or do we go slower, simpler, more consciously? And then we learn that there are many things that don't need to be done, and actually when they are done, they cause more harm than good to the food, you know?
Well, and before we go any further, I have two questions from the board for you guys. The first one was, what natural ways can I lower my cholesterol?
Well, I have something easy. Stop eating red meat and dairy products. I want to say this about red meat. We do know that, you know, a lot of people eat it and they feel they need it and da-da-da, but we have way overdone it, and our country consumes, you know, much more than it really needs. And there's been a tradition on the, so let me say a couple more things about cholesterol, and then I'll go back to the red meat thing. Eat 3 tart apples a day. Apples are high in pectin, and pectin helps to bind with cholesterol and carry it out of our bodies. Drink lemon and water. It helps to fluidify the blood. Think about taking garlic capsules, which have been found to lower blood pressure.
Yeah.
There's also a wonderful herb called hawthorn, Crataegus species. Hawthorn, berries, flowers, and leaves. You can find it at health food stores as a tea or in capsules or a tincture, and that has been found to gradually break down cholesterol. But it's also important to stop putting the cholesterol in. And I know a lot of people say, well, it's hereditary, there's nothing I can do about it. If you've inherited some kind of condition, you just need to work harder with good nutrition. So that's a couple simple things, but if I could just have a moment to say something about meat. In most traditional cultures, when people hunted, the hunter who made the kill of the buffalo or the elk would have the honor of eating that still beating heart or that still pulsing liver. You've probably seen that in movies. Okay. And so it was believed that eating an organ from a courageous wild animal would give the warrior strength and courage. But what about the effects if we're to honor the signature of plants and animals, what about the effects of eating animals that are penned up so close together they can't move, where they are so depressed, where they never even get to mate, they're artificially inseminated, where their children are taken away when they're just a few days old? Could that be making people depressed? If a still beating heart from a wild animal could give someone courage, could eating the flesh of an animal that's anxious, fearful, depressed, miserable, really living in a hell on earth, be making people fearful and anxious? I believe that there's something to that. So there's a YouTube called Meet Your Meat, and it might be worthy of doing. My husband's not vegetarian. He eats meat on occasion, but he's, you know, really backed off from, you know, doing it like an everyday, like we really need it. I think we could feed a lot more people on the planet if we would eat the foods that the animals eat, the grains and the fruits and vegetables. And we don't even consider it a clean thing to eat carnivorous animals. So that's my 10 cents on that. But you can lower cholesterol. Whenever we have a health condition, it's an opportunity to reevaluate and to do something to get more in alignment with our Creator.
Okay. I have a nice example about my mother to answer that question, Paula. After what Brigitte said, my mother came to me once and she said, "Hey, you know, I just came from the doctor and my cholesterol is so high. He's really, really concerned about that." And so he gave her pills and I said, "Mom, you should be careful. I don't want to say that all pills are bad. That's not true, because I know some clients I have seen who have done very well on emergency medication, but not on lifetime addiction medication." And so I said, "You know, Mom, there are alternative ways." And she said, "What do you suggest?" So I told her to take what you suggested, Brigitte, the powdered garlic in capsules. I don't want to name a company, but there is one that's really outstanding anyway. And so I said, "Go get that, and you'll see." And I told her how to take it and everything. So simple. About, I think it was a month or a month and a half later, she went back to see her doctor. He took her cholesterol test and all this, and he says, "Oh, my God, Madame Labrec, that medication really acted wonderfully on you. It is totally normalized now." She said, "Oh, thank you so much for telling me, doctor, because I have not touched that medication. I listened to what my daughter told me, suggested, you know." And when she told him what it was so simple. Fortunately, the doctors are more and more open to that. So he didn't laugh at her. On the opposite, he said, "Well, I'm most happy to see that if it did good to you, let it be, you know." But her cholesterol came down to perfectly normal, and within the matter of about, I would say, between 1 to 2 months. So there are natural, and we have to realize that nature was on earth way before pills became invented, you know. So we have, sometimes I find that in life we have things upside down. We look at things being first when they came after. We have to go back to the source, to the beginning. And even if we look at medication, I was told once that 65% of all medications come from extractions of plants. But naturally they cannot.
Now,
go ahead, Brigitte.
Could you say just one more time what it was your mother did to lower her cholesterol?
Oh, it was just like Brigitte said. She just took garlic capsules, encapsulated garlic that they can have at the health food stores. And they work wonderful because they're concentrated. Now we're trying to heal a problem. It's true that they can also eat raw garlic. It's wonderful. You can make a tomato sandwich with lettuce or sprouts or, you know. And by the way, the word I was looking for earlier was a nursery. The earth, planet Earth, or Urantia, is a nursery ground for the souls. We sprout our souls. So back to the garlic, they can take, they can just cut little slices of raw organic garlic in their tomato sandwich and eat that regularly. And it goes, it's full of sulfur, and it will go and normalize the cholesterol and do wonder and kill fungi in the blood and all that. So it's a miraculous food.
Okay, and here's another great question. We're getting quite a few on the board, you guys, so you're doing
great. I love it.
Yeah, somebody would like to know what raw foods are a good source of iron.
Okay, I'm happy to answer that. Green leafy vegetables are high in iron. Red-colored beets are high in iron. Almonds are a good source of iron. Also, there's an herb that I like a lot, and this is something you can enjoy as an herb tea, and the herb is stinging nettles, Urtica dioica, and it's wonderful for, oh, I love nettles. I mean, if I were going to another planet and I could bring some herbs in me, nettles, we need it around the world. Nettles is very high in iron, and it also is very mineralizing for the bones. It's high in calcium and the amino acid lysine, and during the winter, we drink a quart of nettles tea a day. You can buy nettles at the health food store. It grows wild. I'm actually, I think I have a YouTube that I just posted on nettle juice. It's called Wild Weed Nettle Juice. It just went up yesterday. And I also have a YouTube, Sunflower Sprouts, the ins and outs, if people want to see how to grow the sprouts Diane's talking about. So, you know, the animals that we think, oh, I need to eat red meat, it's really high in iron, most of these animals are vegetarian. They're eating a lot of greens, grass, which is more of their natural diet. So, yes to nettles and beets and green leafy vegetables. My favorite is kale. So kale is high in iron, high in beta carotene, high in protein, and low in oxalic acid. So that's a really good thing for people with arthritis who want to not overdo oxalic acid. So hopefully that answers your question, and go forth.
And my answer, if you allow me, Brigitte, is back to chlorophyll. It is, like I said, if people understand, I mean, it's miraculous. When I found that molecular structure of plant blood, which you so encourage, Brigitte, the greens, well, the plant blood, especially chlorophyll, has exactly, if you look at the molecular structure, I have them right in front of my eyes right now, they're the same, identical molecular structure, except the nucleus. The nucleus of chlorophyll or plant blood is magnesium, and by biological transmutation, which means that this is a miracle of life, it transmutes into iron when it goes into the human blood. And so what is a high source of iron that leaves no aftermath? Chlorophyll or the greens, like Brigitte says. And to every day I take a glass of pure spirulina, which has so much chlorophyll in it. It's so high in chlorophyll. And also, I was reading a scientific research that says, especially the spirulina I'm using, which is 100% organic, it has been proven that it is 90 to 100% effective in depression. And it is so true that sometimes, you know, I'm working a lot with the United Urantia Family Festival, and I'm doing many hours, sometimes until 1, 2 in the morning, and then starting again at 7. So sometimes my body, my human machine, does get tired. I just make myself with a bit of raw apple juice and half apple juice, half water, and then a big heaping tablespoon of chlorophyll. I drink that 15, 20 minutes after. I am just so full of energy. People look at me here in Montreal and they say, how do you do it, Diane? Well, it helps a lot, because think of all the people that are using antidepressants. If you use chlorophyll on top of using greens, like Brigitte is talking about, that does so much good, you also, it's like a triple whammy. It's good for health, it's good for your antidepressant, and it's also good for your iron. So you don't get depressed when you use greens. And why? Because you are beings of light. And being of light like we are, putting light in our body, we just get joy. And then joy creates good deeds and good thoughts and good words and then a good planet. So it's all interrelated again. That was my two cents.
Bless you. Here we have another question that's really burning on someone's mind, and that is nut allergies and why, when she and her husband eat nuts, do they get so ill? Is there anything to do about that?
Surely. Well, first of all, cashews are in the poison ivy family, in the Anacardiaceae family, so I would be careful of cashews. Peanuts are not technically a nut. They are a legume, so they're more a closer relative of soybeans and beans, so forget those. Pecans are usually boiled for an hour, and then they're dehydrated at 300 degrees. The point where enzymes get killed is 114 degrees, so we can cross pecans off the list. Sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, which are technically a seed, seem to be quite well digested. Now, in the raw food world, and I talk about this in my book, Rawsome, there's something that can be done to make nuts be more digestible, and that is to soak them overnight and rinse them. Soak them overnight and rinse them. A lot of people find that when they eat raw walnuts that they irritate their mouth, give them sores in the mouth. So if you soak them overnight and rinse them, you're actually getting rid of something called enzyme inhibitors or germination inhibitors.
Yes.
It's believed that that might even be why, of course, it's hard to know the mind of a squirrel. I'm sure God understands it better than us, but it may be that that's why squirrels are burying their nuts, to get rid of the enzyme inhibitors. And I just want to say something about germination inhibitors. It's a protective factor in nature to keep the nuts and seeds from sprouting before their time. Picture this. Here it is, October. A walnut falls from the tree. It starts to sprout and grow little leaves, and then we get 2 feet of snow. That walnut is not going to have a chance to turn into a walnut tree. But if it could just stay dormant until the springtime, when we're moving into a season of increased light and heat, then the walnut has a chance. There's something built into nature called enzyme inhibitors that are best gotten rid of, and that can make nuts and seeds more digestible. I also wanted to say that most almonds are pasteurized, even the ones that say they're raw. So you either have to seek out really raw almonds or buy Spanish raw almonds. So I'd say if there are some nuts you can tolerate, like sunflower seeds and pumpkin seeds, pine nuts, you know, focus on the ones that you can tolerate, and then try soaking them overnight and rinsing them. And then you might say, well, now I've got a bunch of wet nuts. What do I do with them? You could, you know, add chili powder and Celtic salt and dehydrate them. If you have a food dehydrator, you could also puree the nuts, which makes it easier for people that don't have great teeth or they're elderly. You know, you could puree the nuts and make like a nut pate that you add to a salad. And, of course, nuts are a good source of protein. Pistachio nuts are also in the poison ivy family. So I tend to, you know, cross a lot of nuts off the list anyways for all of those reasons. But they are a good source of vegan protein. Also, hemp seed is a wonderful source of protein. It is much more digestible than soybeans, and it's really high in omega-3 fatty acids. So that might be another way of getting the benefits of nuts and seeds by using something that's more technically a seed that has the same health properties.
I would like to add to what Brigitte said. Another factor, Paula, to the questions about allergies with nuts, and I find often observe that if people buy the nuts in their shells, you know, that have not been touched by humans, and just buy a nutcracker and crack their own nuts, isn't that amazing how little allergy people have? And then when they buy commercial nuts, even if it says, like Brigitte says, it can say many things, you know, like raw or this or that, it's in the process that they don't tell us. They don't write it on the bag or on the box, you know, but they have been humanly processed. And in the process, there has been something that has altered their absorption, their easiness of absorption. But when you go to the source again and just buy the walnuts in their shells, the almonds in their shells, and you crack your nuts one by one, first of all, it makes you much more respectful, much more spiritually conscious of what you're doing, instead of just grabbing it and putting it in the grinder and you chew on it, you know. You become much more conscious of what you're doing, and people tell me, wow, I thought I was allergic to this. I have some nuts here at home, and this is a true, honest story. my sister has, how do you say in English when you eat sharks, encephalitis, you know, when you eat food and if you... I'm sorry?
Oh, anaphylactic shock.
Anaphylactic shock. And if she eats nuts, 20 minutes after she was taken to the hospital, and the last time they said, next time, lady, you know, don't be afraid, don't be surprised if you just go and leave us. Just don't do it. And so she's been so scared, not so cautious, that she has not been touching any. I have a source of nuts that is of such quality that every time I give some to friends of mine or clients of mine as a gift, they go, oh, my God, Diane, they taste so good. And so one day my sister was over at my place, and it was on the table, and there was a jar full of them. So by inadvertence, she just picked them up, just like everybody, and started to chew, and she said, oh, my God, they're so good. And then she went, oh, my God, I just ate some nuts. Oh, my God. And she started to feel like she was in a bit of a state of a panic. And then 20 minutes passed, she had no reaction. Half an hour passed, no reaction. 2 hours later, no reaction. And I said, you see, Marie, it's in the quality. It's in what has been done or what has not been done that often makes the whole difference. And to this day, she comes to my place and she can have those nuts, and she's not reacting yet. Everywhere else we've seen her, and she goes into anaphylactic shock, and she has to travel with her pills, you know. So if people crack their nuts, it may help in their preventing their allergic reaction, just as an advice, a little suggestion.
Okay, so now we have a person on the board who loves pecans, and they grow naturally, and she eats them off the tree, and she's wondering, Brigitte, what you said specifically about pecans.
Well, if you're eating them right off the tree, then they're usually not boiled for an hour, which is going to kill the enzymes. Enzymes actually help digestion. And so we want to have the enzymes intact, but we want to get rid of the enzyme inhibitors. So most commercial pecans that people buy are boiled for an hour and then dehydrated at 300 degrees, and enzymes get killed at 114 degrees. But if someone is having a hard time digesting even, you know, pecans that they shell themselves, as Diane said, try soaking them overnight and rinsing them. And also, nuts do go rancid quickly. They have a high oil content. So I like to support natural food stores that are keeping their nuts refrigerated. I think that's really important. And it's also better to buy whole nuts. When you buy nuts that are ground up in little pieces or slivers,
yes,
that's also going to increase the potential for rancidity.
Okay, and what about eggs, you guys? What do you say? What do you think about eggs? Are they good for us? What? I mean,
they're not on. They're a common allergen, and eggs are. You know, this is another example. If you know, maybe if you had chickens in your backyard, that would be a lot better. But you know, even things that are labeled cage-free or free-range can literally mean that they open the cage door for 5 minutes a day. So the chickens are really, you know, not even, they're not even going to all get outside. And if you've ever been in a chicken house, a commercial chicken factory, the smell is terrible. The chickens are being fed cow manure. Can you believe that? They're fed a constant stream of hormones and antibiotics so that they'll lay more eggs, and they leave the lights on 24 hours so the chickens will think it's daylight and they'll just keep laying eggs. So you're not going to get great health from eggs like that. Maybe if you had some chickens in your backyard, that would be a different story. So again, it's not necessarily that a food is bad or good. It's that how it's become into sort of a factory food rather than a natural food. So that's my take on that. I currently don't eat eggs. I'm doing my best to stay on the Adam and Eve diet as best I can.
Well, you know, I have this this issue in my life where I just can't process carbohydrates very well. And they tend to, I was a vegetarian for about 5 years, and I gained a lot of weight because I just can't process carbohydrates. They tend to put weight on me. It's just a slow but sure thing. Over a period of years, it'll be like 10 pounds a year or something.
Are you type blood O?
The only thing that has worked for me has been high-protein diets. And obviously, I don't eat a lot of raw meat, so I have to cook it. And it seems like every diet that's ever worked for me has been really high in protein and low in carbohydrates, which creates an imbalance, I think. And I just have this problem. I mean, I started gaining weight when I was 10 years old. It seems like puberty was the issue for me. And literally in 2 years, between 11 and 12, I gained 70 pounds in 2 years. Now, I look back on that and I think, that's alarming. That's alarming. But nobody looked at it from that point of view of, like, there's something going on there. And it's just a lifelong thing. And I'm sure if I ate nothing but raw, Brigitte, you got our dear friend Don Green on the raw diet.
Aww.
And you've lost pounds. And he's so thrilled about it. And, I'm sure I could do that. It's just a matter of changing over my taste buds, but also a way to find those foods that are high in protein, because I just can't, for some reason, I just can't process the carbohydrates. I don't know.
I have a question for you, Paula. Are you blood type O?
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so? Do
no.
you know your blood type?
I forget that kind of stuff, Diane. And
okay.
I have a card in my purse. Let me look it up, and I'll tell you what blood type I am.
I'd like to say something about the carbohydrates. I find so many people do so much better when they get off of gluten. Gluten is a very common allergen, and it's found in wheat, rye, barley, spelt, and kamut. And gluten is a protein that makes things stick together, which I think is very congesting to the body. It doesn't break down. It tends to cause a histamine reaction where people are getting inflammation, and that could result in arthritis, weight gain. As a matter of fact, animals these days are being fed the grains rather than their natural grass diet. So even people say, I really don't do that well with wheat, but yet they're eating, cattle that are fed wheat or corn, for example, could still be perpetrating an allergy. But it's interesting. Gluten, it's a little like glue. It makes things stick together. And one of the reasons they feed cattle these days grains is because it makes them get fat faster. And it's been said that the average American consumes between one-third and two-thirds of their diet as wheat. If you think about it, toast, French toast, pancakes, waffles, burritos, pizza, pasta. And so what we often do with the gluten-rich foods is we make pastry and pasta, which is like paste. So I'm a big advocate. I don't think people really need to eat those grains. They can be improved by sprouting them.
Yes.
But I think that, that doesn't necessarily need to be a part of the diet. And I know that makes people think, like, well, what do I eat then? Fresh fruits and vegetables, nuts and seeds. There's so many, other things that we can eat. And again, I'm not saying that everyone needs to do what I'm doing, but as people quest for health, I find that when people get off of gluten, they often have remarkable improvements in their health. And it may be that the grains have been so hybridized, they're very far from their natural state. It might also be a concern that they are ground up, months if not years in advance, whereas it used to be homes had a little mill, where they would grind the grains fresh. Maybe that made it better. But now, people are buying whole wheat flour in bulk, and it might have been ground up 2 years ago.
It's in silos, in huge silos, and it has been done, like you say, years and years ago, and it's just staying there until it's being used. Your point on gluten is excellent, Brigitte. Do you advocate like Ezekiel bread and sprouted bread like that?
Because they're heated, they're baked at like 250 degrees. I don't eat them, but I do make my own type of bread like that just by sprouting. Like I made sprouted rye bagels a couple weeks ago. And so I just sprouted the rye, and then I pureed it in a food processor, and then I dehydrated it. And, you know, it is interesting. The Urantia book says that Jesus wasn't an Essene, but we do know that the Essenes were a group of people. It's, you know, they were a group of people that lived around the Dead Sea around the time of Christ, and they did eat raw food. They would sprout their grains, and then they would bake them on the hot rocks of the desert. And
yes.
It's also said that people, not in the Urantia book, but what I've learned about the Essenes, that many people that were sick in the villages, they would go and stay with the Essenes to learn about eating healthier and fasting and life.
Closer to nature.
Yeah, and so the Essenes, they adopted children. They didn't have their own children. So they did a real community service of, you know, being an example for health and an alternative lifestyle. Way back then. So, and it's believed that they ate live food, and maybe there's something to learn from them.
I have a question for you, if Brigitte. If you have people that you meet and they're completely new to raw food, what would be your approach, like a gentle approach to get them started? If people came to you and said, Brigitte, can you help me? I really believe in what you're saying, but this is completely new to me. I don't want to go overboard, you know. What would you say? What would you suggest?
Well, I would say have one meal a day green leafy vegetables. I think everybody could have a salad every day. And another thing, this might be a little advanced, but I encourage people to learn the names of some of the weeds that are coming up in their yard and make juice out of them. I love that. Lamb's quarter, violets, nettles, dandelion greens. I would also encourage people to start making their own salad dressing. The quality of oils that people are using, canola and soy oil, all of those oils, when they're pressed, the machinery heats up to about 200 to 300 degrees. And when we heat oils, that causes free radical production. And free radicals are not just people that live in Boulder. They're in our food. They're unpaired molecules. So I would say switch to olive oil. Of course, that's the oil that would have been used for thousands of years. It certainly was the oil that is mentioned
in the time of Jesus.
In the time of Jesus, absolutely. Because olive is a fruit, the oil presses out really easily.
Mm-hmm.
I would say eat more color. That we know that the colors of foods are going to indicate different nutrients. So, Diane, you've done a great job about talking about the importance of greens. But I say look for color, you know, sweet potatoes over white potatoes,
yes.
Raspberries, a pink grapefruit over a white grapefruit. Grow a garden. When you're taking children shopping in the produce section, ask them to pick out some red foods that they're willing to eat, some orange foods, some yellow foods. Don't try this in the candy aisle, but keep a food journal. Read the labels, and when you see things like artificial color, monosodium glutamate, that doesn't go in your shopping cart. You want to start saying no to companies that are disregarding the health of the people. I'd also say, you know, try going gluten-free or dairy-free if you have any kind of health congestion or inflammation in your body. So this is also very interesting in medicine right now. We're finding out that almost all diseases are inflammation. All of the itis conditions, arthritis, tonsillitis, hepatitis, colitis, even things like fibromyalgia, acne, are inflammation. And what reduces inflammation are enzymes. And enzymes are that spark of life that makes the raw
right.
sunflower seed grow, not
right.
the cooked one. So
and
those are a few things.
That's great. You know, you just reminded me, Brigitte, as you answered, thank you, of Dr. Bernard Jensen. I met him in my life. I had the blessing to take a course with him. I was so happy just before he passed away. And one of the latest books, I think he wrote something like 60-some books, and one of his latest ones was on the color of food and the importance. It was so beautiful. The picture he had was like a cupboard with many stories and many shelves in the cupboard, and every shelf was filled with colored food resonating with the chakras. So just like you have red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, he was saying that the food, again, just like earlier we said, the shape of the food, like the walnut, feeds the brain, the hemispheres, and this and so on and so forth. Well, the same thing with the color. The blueberries, they go at the level of the chakra that heals that. And in the army, in the First World War, in England, they, you know, the fruit bilberry and elderberry, and they're extremely dark fruits. And it was known that the fighter pilots who were driving the planes, they were eating bilberry jam and elderberry jam. And they noticed, they had actually told in the army their superiors that somehow their sight was getting better and they could actually see sharper at night. But that food, again, was going up into the brain area. So it's really wonderful when you talk about the colored food because, yes, the green, the importance of green is on the chlorophyll that transmutes into iron, but at the same time, all the other colors, they feed the rest of the body, right from the bottom chakra, the base chakra, right to the brain chakra, and it goes level by level, color by color. And food has an intelligence, an innate intelligence, that just like when they say people, you were talking about the hunters before, and they would eat like the raw heart or something. Well, it has the cells of the food have an intelligence that go know where to go, and they will go and feed the heart. So the same thing, the color has an intelligence and goes in an area that's directed by that chakra, that vortex of energy. It's really beautiful.
Oh, we just had someone on the board. I quoted Dr. Barry Spears, who said food is the most powerful drug you'll ever ingest. And on the board said, and I love this, son, thanks for putting this out there. She quoted Hippocrates, "Let food be thy medicine, and medicine be thy food." And, you know, it's just amazing to me. And Brigitte, I know this is something that's dear to your heart. And yours too, Diane, that women have typically held natural medicines, and that has been something that midwifery was all about. Midwives were the poor people's doctors, and only the wealthy in olden times had physicians, but midwives were the women who had the knowledge of herbs and had the knowledge of natural medicines and foods, and they did heal the common people. And midwifery was all but lost. And in fact, I've heard some stories about how a lot of the witch hunts in Europe was about the wealthy ruling class physicians wiping out the midwives and hence the poor people's doctors. And in some instances left only one woman in a whole village living. Natural medicines and the knowledge of herbs and medicines has been coming back to us in the 20th century, and this is part of the empowerment of women again, and which makes me think on a personal level is why I believe that our Mother Eve is the resident Governor General on the planet as of about 1934, and I just vibe that. I don't know if that's true or not, but the appearances of the Mother all over the planet. In places like Medjugorje, make me think that it's not Mary. They think it's Mary. It's really Eve, and she's a member of the 420 counselors, according to the Arantia book. And every 100 years, a member of the 420 acts as resident governor general. I believe it's Eve because of the return of natural medicines and herbal medicines and the knowledge of herbs and food and the kinds of things that you hold, that you both hold and that you bring in. So, you know, I'm just wondering if you maybe could comment on that, either one of you.
Well, I would love to say something because just like they left the core of women of apostles out of the Bible, and it wasn't until we had the Urantia revelations that we even knew that there was a group of, you know, women that were following Jesus as well as the men. And then after Jesus died, and you know, Christians were persecuted, and then between 1400 and 1700, it's been estimated that, you know, millions of women were executed for being not only midwives, but herbalists was the other thing that could get you in big trouble. And there was this sense of, just when they cut off the heads of the goddess statues, which might have also been representations of Eve, there was a way of, like, man wanted to dominate nature. And even if a woman wanted to go to medical school, she wasn't allowed to. Women were often taught not to read. They were deliberately oppressed. And, you know, medicine throughout history has, yes, it's sometimes involved herbs, but as soon as they could figure that out, they started using heavy metals like mercury and arsenic. Rather than just using plants, they started trying to transform them into chemicals. That was one of the even things that alchemy was about, like extracting the pure from the impure, whereas the herbal approach was, you know, plants are like a symphony. It's not just one chemical constituent. It's chlorophyll and it's vitamins. It's essential oils. It's saponins. And so, you know, who knows how much further along we would be with natural medicine had it not really been persecuted. And I see the persecution of herbal medicine, that's something that went along with the persecution of the herbalists and midwives, and it was also the persecution of women. And so, fortunately, some of that knowledge has survived. One of the things that really scared people that midwives and herbalists knew about things like contraception. And, you know, the church really didn't want people to know how you could prevent a pregnancy, or even that was like, you know, you just needed to keep having more members for the church. And that was something that could get you in big trouble, helping a woman to not have 11 children and die in childbirth. Well, it was believed that, you know, the church would say that if a woman died in childbirth, she would go directly to heaven. But, you know, what a predicament to leave, you know, a poor man with 12 young children to feed and no wife or no mother for those children. So it's a dark period in history, and one that I have read a lot about. I teach a class on the history of herbal medicine, and that is certainly a part of it. And it's time to resurrect that in a gentle and kind way, because it is the right thing for the planet. And we are constantly, if you watch an hour of TV, what you're bombarded with is, eat this junk food, buy these drugs. Eat this junk food, buy these drugs. And yet there's another way. Don't eat that food. Try these herbs instead.
Oh, man, did you touch a subject that is so dear to my heart? If I ruled the world, the first thing I would do is outlaw all drug commercials. I just am absolutely incensed that drug companies are allowed to advertise on television. It's just unbelievable to me. And people, we know for a fact that people are susceptible to the power of a suggestion. If you suggest that they are sick, It's like restless leg syndrome. No one ever heard of it. Now everybody has restless leg syndrome.
Because they drink too many bull, how is it called? The Red Bull?
Red Bull.
And then they wonder why they kick the leg, you know. Well, kick the Red Bull and you'll stop kicking your leg, you know.
I was just going to say something, Diane.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the way I know you, Brigitte, you would be such a beautiful midwife. You know, I would have seen you being a midwife, and I was just going to say this to you, and then I realized you are midwifing this movement, this movement of consciousness. That's what we are doing. The world needs midwives now to gently bring the world into that consciousness back to nature. So you are a natural midwife by nature, you know?
Oh, thank you so much. Well,
I
started reading the Urantia book when I was 19 years old, and during that time I lived in a teepee totally off of wild edible plants. And I did have two babies at home that I gave birth to with the help of, you know, a few friends. And so the whole natural childbirth and herbal medicine and living on the land. You know, I read most of the Urantia book by candlelight or kerosene lantern because we didn't have electricity.
Wow.
So thank you. That's a very dear thing coming from you, Diane. And
I mean it from my heart. You are a midwife naturally.
My prayer, of course, as all of ours is to be of service and to do God's will. And I do relate, you know, Paula, what you said about Eve. I feel connected to Eve. I feel, you know, that she would want us to reinstate things about taking care of the planet and using the herbs, which she knew all about. It said that Eve knew so well the chemistry of fruits and vegetables, and she was able to make nut milks for her children when they were weaned from the breast at 1 year of age. So, you know, wake up, America. Cow's milk is a perfect food for calves. Mother's milk is a perfect food for humans.
And nut milks are so good when you taste real fresh made almond milk or, you know, different milks, rice milk, oat milk, like Eve did. They taste so good, you know, with a rice cracker, and then you put some kind of nut butter and whatever. What better drink to have than a nut milk? And it tastes so good. It's so harmonized.
I also have a YouTube out called Nut Milk in a Minute. So I'm really, you know, trying to, you know, just show people how easy it is. And when you make a nut milk, there's no packaging left over. Not only is it raw and unpasteurized, but there's nothing to throw away or even recycle. And then the pulp that's left over could be used to make raw breads or cookies or crackers. So it's a way of re-educating ourselves. And sometimes I wonder if, you know, sickness isn't a huge industry that, you know, people in power profit from. I think we can see that there is a lot of corruption in the world, and perhaps medicine is one of those areas that people have been disempowered, and it's time to reclaim our alignment with God, really, by being part of creation and not harming it, and feeling this alignment by imbibing the chlorophyll and the solar energy that the colors of the plants give us. It really gets down to pretty simple stuff.
You know, I would like to say something.
Another important question for you guys from the board. This person is on inhalers and wants to get off of them, but right now just can't get enough oxygen without them. What do you guys suggest?
Well, chlorophyll is huge. I mean, chlorophyll helps to bring oxygen into the body. And so learning to make green drinks. Again, I just, YouTube, wild weed nettle juice. Check it out. You can do it with other plants, but you could also make green juice with kale. You can buy tablets or powders of greens, like Diane mentioned, the barley grass and wheatgrass. But I also find that a lot of people that have respiratory congestion have some kind of allergy that is making them full of phlegm. And it's very often dairy and gluten, you know, dairy and gluten. So rather than what's the right remedy, we also need to be looking at what is the cause. It's not about, you know, selling another product or another thing to take. It's about what am I doing that's making this happen? And again, my daughter Rainbow, my children are named Sunflower and Rainbow. I am, you're right, a flower child through and through. And Rainbow had asthma as a child. And it found out that, you know, it happened as a food allergy. And I'm also going to share another herbal formula that I used to treat her with asthma, and I've used it for thousands of clients since, and it's very simple. It's half a cup of raw honey, another ancient medicine, half a cup of fresh lemon juice, 7 cloves of garlic, and garlic is a bronchial dilator, 1 inch of fresh ginger root, which is also antimicrobial and something that improves circulation, and about 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. And you blend it all up, and you take a teaspoon as needed, and it dilates your bronchioles. There are also herbal inhalers. There's something called salt air, where you can inhale Himalayan sea salt. And I will also say that one of the things that helped my daughter Rainbow totally overcome asthma is she learned to do yoga breathing when she was 6 years old. Rather than her breath controlling her, she learned how to do deep abdominal breathing. And I taught her by putting a little rubber duck on her belly. I said, make the waves get big. Now make the waves get small. And now she's a world famous yogini and has 8 DVDs and teaches all around the planet because she knows that yoga and natural foods helped her. And so there are alternatives. There's, you know, I could talk about other herbs, but I'd like to know more about a person's health condition before I get really specific, and this probably isn't the place to do that.
Can you just one more time give that recipe that you just gave?
Sure. Half a cup of raw honey, really raw honey, you know, not like stuff you buy in the grocery store that's clear. It should be crystallized. Half a cup of fresh lemon juice, 5 to 7 cloves of garlic. If they're really small, you can use up to 12. An inch of fresh ginger root, and 1/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper. And you just run it all in the blender, and then you put it in a jar. You can store it in a jar in the refrigerator. It'll keep for several months refrigerated. And you take a spoon of that, and that's very helpful. But again, if you haven't... So that's it. I learned it from a Rastafarian medicine man.
Where you can get the salt inhaler as well.
I would Google it. I think the company's called Salt Air, SALTAIR, Salt Air. And it's a new product, and I think
great. It's Himalayan salt, huh?
Right, and it comes with the salt, so that's an alternative. And then there's many... essential oils that can be used in aromatherapy that help to open the bronchioles, like eucalyptus oil, for example. So those are a few ideas. And if, you know, someone has a serious health condition or they've been on medication for a long time, it might be good to get with a, you know, qualified holistic health practitioner to, you know, just have someone look at your diet or see what you're already using. I'm always careful when people are on a lot of medications of stopping them cold turkey. Sometimes it's good to gradually decrease. And I do, you know, I will just put out that I do phone consultations with people all around the planet.
Okay, so a couple more questions. What about mushrooms, and what about pickled foods? That's my question. I'm curious as to what pickling does to the quality of the life force.
Well, throughout the planet, people that are known for really long lives often eat some kind of fermented food. So I don't mean like, you know, pickled like vinegar, but when you think of foods like, yogurt with active cultures, I think of all the dairy products, yogurt is one of the best because it's been brought back to life, being inoculated with probiotics. I also think of sauerkraut, but it's got to be unpasteurized. Taking cabbage and fermenting it makes it more digestible and full of active cultures. Most brands that you see at the grocery store, though, they ferment it and then they pasteurize it, which kills the enzymes. So you can learn to make your own sauerkraut. You can buy some in the health food stores, but it's usually kept refrigerated. And sometimes you find a local deli that makes it themselves, and it's not pasteurized. But kimchi is another example. Trying to think of some other fermented foods, unpasteurized miso, unpasteurized tamari. So fermented foods help to put friendly bacteria in the intestines, but that's very different than a jar of dill pickles or, you know, sweet pickles. And then mushrooms, I do use some mushrooms, mostly shiitake mushrooms, which are a profound immune tonic, and I use those in food. And I don't just eat them raw in a salad. I tend to marinate them and then put them in the dehydrator. I think that mushrooms need some kind of processing. I sometimes use portobello mushrooms, but I can't say mushrooms are a big part of the diet. They're more of an occasional thing. You know, I think that mushrooms shouldn't just be eaten raw in a salad. They really should be processed in some way. They're not a sun food, meaning they grow in the shade and the dark and the dampness, and they help things in nature need to be broken down, like rotting leaves or rotting logs. So So they do have a place, and you know, I appreciate mushrooms, but it's not, it's a very small percentage of my diet.
Mm. You know, there's something I would like to add after what you've been talking about, Brigitte, and the salt, and your question, Paula, from this lady who was asking about the inhaler. Just like Brigitte's book, to me, is so beautiful for people who want to know about raw food. So the title of her book is Rawsome by Brigitte Mars. There's a book concerning that Himalayan salt, and the title is called Water and Salt, The Essence of Life. It is a must read. The author is two people, Dr. Barbara Handel, H-E-N-D-E-L, and Peter Ferreira. And it talks about the sources, where to get it, the inhaler, the mountain gold, authentic Himalayan crystal salt. And when you read that book, it is, talk about an eye-opener. It's unbelievable the information it has in it and how it says, we know from the Urantia book that we originate from the sea. And he talks about how throughout ages, and especially lately in the last 100 or 200 years, how we have disconnected the body from its source, from the ocean, from the salt, from the water, from the right equilibrium, because we are an aquarium. Our body is like a big bag full of water. And so we are an aquarium in which homeopathic substances float, you know, and circulate and feed the organs and all that. And his book, Water and Salt, is a must for people who want to go into raw food and a raw style of living, you know. So I just thought of mentioning it because at the end they have all the information about what this lady wants to know.
Yay.
Beautiful.
Yay.
Two important books that we just mentioned, Brigitte's book, Rawsome, which I imagine is available on Amazon.com. Brigitte.
Paula, would you like to give the code for Brigitte's book? Because people might want to buy it, and if we give the code, it's easy to get it.
Well, and it's easy to find. The title is just Rawsome, right?
Yes. Rawsome by Brigitte Mars. Yeah, that's fine.
Yes.
And it's on Amazon, and, you know, ask your local natural food stores or bookstores to carry it too. It is good to, you know, to support local businesses, because otherwise it's all going to be big corporations somewhere. So do support some local businesses as best you can.
And can they buy it at your site, BrigitteMars.com as well?
Right. I'll spell my name, Brigitte, BrigitteMars.com. And I do have a story on my site called Hippie Chick Seeks Revelation about how I found the Urantia book. And it's not the traditional way. As I said, I was a child of the 60s and, you know, found the Urantia book while living on a commune in the Ozarks eating wild edible plants. And I started reading the book and I felt this feeling like this rings true in my heart. And then I just want to say this. I later had a vegetarian restaurant in Miami called The Supernatural, and we used to get these teas in from Celestial Seasonings, and they had little tags on them. And I would look at these tags, and I said, these people read the Urantia book. I can tell by what they're saying on the tags. And that was one of my reasons for coming to Boulder, because I needed to find other people that were Urantia book readers.
Well, and you were right. The founders of Celestial Seasonings Tea Company are both Urantia book readers, and we know them and love them well, Mr. Mo Siegel and Mr. John Hay. And they're both still involved in natural healing and natural foods. And Mo sits on the board of Whole Foods, and John Hay has a company called White Dove Herbals. And there's definitely an herbal thing going on in Boulder for many years now, probably more health foods per capita than anywhere in health food stores than anywhere in the world. But somebody just mentioned Bach flower remedies, and I know you both are experts on that, so maybe you can tell us a little bit about that too.
Well, flower essences are a very gentle form of medicine, and Dr. Edward Bach was a bacteriologist who lived in England and had a very successful practice, and he felt very called to go be in nature and tune into the plants. And what he learned was that he worked with 38 different remedies, and they had different effects on the emotional body. So one of the most popular is Rescue Remedy, which is a combination of 5 different flowers. And if I go anywhere and I have my purse, I always have Rescue Remedy with me because it's really good for emergency crisis situations like, you know, stress, or, you know, someone on the plane next to you is afraid, or it might be fear of a job interview or public speaking. So I love the Bach Flower Remedies. I actually have a little, I just got certified as a Bach Flower practitioner, and I have a little Bach Flower book on the dining room table. So when I read, just for practice, when I read Dear Abby in the morning, I look up, what flower essence would I give them? Oh, they need crabapple or vervain, for example. So it's something to look at. You can read about it online. Ask your local health food store to give you a little chart so you can figure out what flower essences might help you. But they help those subtle emotional patterns. And this is another example of, you know, looking at the pattern in plants and how they can affect our human physiology that is really designed to be connected with these plants.
It's so true. I would like to add something, both of you, and I'm so happy you asked the question, Paula, about Bach Flower Remedies, because like Brigitte said, Dr. Bach in England was studying about that, and I would like to add, he said, flowers are to emotions what plants are to the body. And I would like to tell you a story, both of you, you probably don't know it, but it really, really touched me, moved me. Years ago when I took my course as a Bach Flower practitioner, today I realized I took it to heal myself, and now I'm able to help other people heal themselves. Years and years and years ago, many moons ago, as the Indians would say, I had a traumatic situation, an experience. We all have traumatic experiences at one time in our life. And that experience had caused me extreme grief and anxiety. And for about, I would say, 20 years, I can honestly say there's not a single day I didn't think about it. And when I first discovered Dr. Bach's flower remedies, it rang true. You know, it's like true north. It went, yeah, that's good. That's true. I want to know about it. Now I know that I did it for myself first, and it worked. I started to diagnose myself, and I thought, I want to see if I can heal myself of this trauma, because there's not a single day I don't think about it. There's not a single day I don't feel affected by that. And as I did the whole course, I remember around the end, I made myself a formula in accordance to what I had lived and with the flower. Well, the beauty is that you don't know how long it will take. It may take 1 day, 1 month, 1 year, I don't know. But it depends how deep the emotional trauma is ingrained, is deeply rooted inside the body. And so I can tell you it took me about 3 months. Every day I took my formula. And when I did know it at all, one day I remember I was living in Toronto by myself. I was filled with sunshine in my heart. It was beautifully sunny outside. Everything was right. And all of a sudden, I started to cry. And it turned into weeping. And it's almost like I was beside myself thinking, why am I crying so much? I can't understand. I was feeling so good. And all of a sudden, you know the chakras, Brigitte?
Mm, surely.
Yes, I started to feel an actual turning in my lower chakra. Now today I realize it was exactly starting from where the trauma had been related from. And I started to have a nausea, and I thought, oh my God, I'm going to throw up. Oh my God. And as I was crying and sobbing, it started to turn like a vortex, and it started to come up just in the center of my being, and it was coming up, and then at the level of my stomach, and then it's turning, and I'm crying, oh my God, I'm going to throw up, and then it kept coming up, 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 and when it came to my throat, I burped. I had a big burp. I thought I was going to throw up, but I didn't. I burped. And as I burped, it's like almost like I had a flash. I saw again the situation that had caused me such a trauma. And it was like I was the observer. I was seeing it, reliving it, but I was emotionally detached from it. And it's like there's a beautiful thought that crossed my mind. Whatever you see consciously can never hurt you again. And bang, I stopped crying, and it's been years. That trauma has been gone, and then I realized that's what it was. I had finally been able to uproot, because, you know, when you have big bad weed in your garden, you can do three things. One, you can just dismiss it and totally not look at it. Two, you can take scissors and cut it, but then it will grow and grow. Or three, you can act with wisdom and intelligence and say, how can I uproot the problem? And that's what had happened. And I know to this day that it was the Bach Flower Remedies, and I've helped some of my clients, and it has helped them tremendously with the Bach Flower Remedies to go at the emotional level, what the plant and what Brigitte has been suggesting to take at the physical level. So it really works.
And guess what? We have a caller, you guys.
Yay.
So we have somebody who has a question here. 416, you're on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, you guys, I'm loving the show. Thank you so much for doing it.
Well, thanks for calling.
So here's my question. It's kind of a two-part question. Recently, I discovered that I have, is it called hypothyroidism? So I have been...
Hypothyroid?
Hypothyroid. Yeah. Like as in an inactive thyroid. And I've been researching natural remedies, and two things keep popping up, Irish moss and maca. And so my questions are, I've just begun researching Irish moss, and I'm wondering your thoughts on it, and also how much one should take, how much of it one should ingest every day. And the second part of the question is, any other ideas what I or anyone having thyroid issues can use to help stimulate the thyroid?
Well, sea vegetables are wonderful for low thyroid, but we also need to look at, what's the cause of an imbalanced thyroid? In Asian medicine, the health of the thyroid is governed by the health of the kidneys, and that's something Western medicine has not really quite caught up with. So the kidneys and the thyroid need lots of minerals, and a great way to do that is to start eating sea vegetables, like kelp and dulse and wakame and hijiki. If you've ever eaten sushi, you've probably eaten some kind of sea vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
But they are so high. The ocean contains this mineral-rich brine that has the same minerals that are in our blood, our sweat, our tears, our bones. And so, you know, we kind of turn our nose up at it, but, you know, many cultures eat sea vegetables on a regular basis. So I would say, if you go to a health food store, you can find capsules that contain a variety of seaweeds, kelp and dulse. So it's not like you have to go to the ocean and get a canoe and bring them in or anything. So it has been done for you. Also keep in mind that fluoridated water inhibits thyroid function. So we have a nation of people on suppressed thyroid that are drinking fluoridated water, because most countries, most states in this nation, even though most places in the world have decided that fluoride has a lot of detriments as well. So I also think it's good to know that there's some foods that inhibit thyroid function, like soybeans and peanuts. And some people say don't eat raw cruciferous vegetables. Cruciferous vegetables are the broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower. And the problem with cruciferous vegetables, it's not that they're raw, it's that we don't have enough iodine. So I say, yes, do eat cruciferous vegetables, but make sure you're getting enough iodine. And just make your cruciferous vegetables more digestible by cooking without heat, like fermenting, marinating, pureeing, things like that. On my website, I do have an article on thyroid health, and it explains a lot of the different herbs, like the seaweeds and I'm trying to think. It's mostly the sea vegetables that are used. Motherwort is one that's used, but it's good to get a look at a list and say, yeah, that sounds like me, or that sounds good, and get an idea of the foods. It's also good to massage your thyroid. So when there's a part of our body that's speaking to us, rather than letting all the remedies be something that put in our mouth. But if you, like, say, okay, where is my thyroid? I'm going to put a few drops of St. John's wort oil on my fingertips, for example, and grab a hold of the area where my thyroid is and just gently go up and down, up and down, up and down to say, you know, thank you, little organ. Here I am. I'm paying attention. Okay, here we're doing stuff.
Okay.
So,
okay.
an illness is an opportunity to take better care of ourselves and learn how to do that, so.
Well, and thank you for that. I'm just kind of curious, when it comes to, this is like kind of going through my mind, because I know my mom has issues with her thyroid, and my grandmother did as well. And we all, you know, I was raised in Canada on the prairies, and we never ate anything having to do with water, you know, the sea or anything like that. It was like beef and, you know, potatoes and all of that stuff. And so are we, like, here in North America, Is a thyroid issue? Are thyroid issues becoming more predominant because of our diet? Do you think, or is it just something that's just genetic?
I think that the diet has a lot to do with it. And again, the genetic thing, sure, genes are important, but we've also gotten disconnected and eating the wrong things. And you know, potatoes are a good starvation food. They're not the ultimate diet. They're not health-giving, but sure, they're great during times of famine and warfare because they keep a long time. They're not, you know, as perishable as, say, lettuce, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that wherever you are, there can't be fresh things that you eat. And potatoes are sort of a high glycemic food. The meat isn't what it used to be. So, make friends with sea vegetables. In my book, Raw Some, I have recipes for mermaid salad. And on my kitchen table, I have a little sprinkler where I sprinkle dulse, which is a mineral-rich red seaweed, on my food, or kelp. So it's just that we've gotten disconnected, and we do know that many places where we live were once covered with ocean water. And it's time to tap into. We do also know the Urantia book says that life was planted in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's a way, by eating those plants that still grow in the ocean, that we can bring those minerals into our body.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you.
Can I add something before she goes?
Sure.
Okay, because I feel this a beautiful harmonious dance between you and me, Brigitte. It's just so wonderful. It flows. It's like ebb and flow, you know. For this lady, I would like to offer a suggestion. There's a product called, you talked a lot, Brigitte, about sea vegetation. There's a doctor, Dr. Wachter's, Wachter. At the beginning of the 20th century, he was diagnosed with a life-threatening disease, and he had just a little bit of time to live. And so he decided to travel before he would die. And he met the Eskimos, and they took care of him, and they gave him a diet very, very rich in sea vegetation. And all this to say that God works in wondrous ways, and this is how he not only survived from his life-threatening disease, but he devoted the rest of his life to helping humanity with this. And the product is called Wachter's Sea Vegetation. You can go at www.wachters.com, and it is phenomenal what that sea vegetation product is. Very, very affordable. And it's like Brigitte was saying, it comes from the sea. It is a concentrated, just pure natural sea vegetables that have been sun-dried, and it would help your body and your thyroid to find its iodine back, get its iodine back. And I just thought of mentioning it because today it is a huge company in California, and they have a first-class quality product, Wachter's Sea Vegetation. I thought it would be important to complete with what Brigitte had been saying.
Thank you for that. I'll check it out because it sounds also very convenient as well. So absolutely, I'll go to the website and check it out. Thank you so much.
Great.
Sure.
Thank you. Thanks, guys.
Guys, that brings me to a question which came up on the board. You know, some people live out in a small town and they don't have a Whole Foods, so they don't have, like we have such an abundance of that here, and I know, Diane, in Montreal you have, you know, ways of getting these wonderful natural products. But what sites would you recommend for people if they want to get some of the things you've been talking about?
I'm quite a fan of a place called Essential Living Foods. Essential Living Foods. I do mail order with them, and I get. They have great things. So we're so blessed right now. Even no matter where we live, we do have access to the World Wide Web, and it is making us more global and more connected in every way. So there's a Sun Food Nutrition. Those are a few places. There's.
Can you give them in your book, Brigitte?
Yes, and in the back of Rossum, I have a list. I'm telling you a few because all you have to do is Google it. A gold mine in San Diego, gold mine, provides a lot of natural food products for the whole world, for people that live out in the country.
I assume these are all .com.
You know, I think if you just Google Goldmine San Diego, you'll find it, or Essential Living Foods. They might be .com, but I would bow to Google.
It may
on
sound
that
funny to, it may sound funny, Brigitte, to add to what you said, but I feel inspired. I feel moved to say, if people pray and really pray their inner spirit to guide them. It is amazing the miracles that happen sometimes when you don't even know it, and your spirit, life, will guide you toward the right people, the right place. All of a sudden, for unknown reason, you just drive to here or to there, or you meet this person, you go to that event, and then you start to get connected, and you get information or sources that you didn't even know existed. So to me, I would like to say that to leave a big place to the spiritual helpers too, because guardian angels, people will help people get to the right connections. And today it almost doesn't make a difference whether you live in a little village of 1,100 people to a place of 11 million people. If you really want it in your heart and soul and you ask and you shall receive, and people will receive whatever they ask with sincerity, more sincerity, and even more sincerity, and sometimes to our surprise in the way we least expected, you know. So I just felt like adding that little sprinkle of spirit inspiration for people.
Thank you so much for that. And you know, I want to also just remind everyone that Jesus said it's more important what comes out of a person's mouth than what goes into it. And so we don't want to make our food or herbs our religion, but everything in our lifestyle can be part of it. But we want to remember that, you know, even more important is how we speak to others and how we...
Yes.
So prayer is certainly high on the list of ways. Thank you for sharing that important message, Diane.
I love you, Brigitte.
I love you. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, it's about the whole person. So,
well, just think of Dr. Waters. When you read his story, it is so marvelous. The man is being told. It's just like my ex-mother-in-law. She was told that she had 3 months to live, and because of her prayers, God guided her to meet the right people. Well, guess what? She lived 27 years later and more, and not 27 years of being in a bed or in a house. She traveled 3 times the whole planet. She went visited 65 countries, and she didn't even die of her illness that she was told she was going to die in 3 months. She died because she had an accident and knocked her head, and she was close to 80. But all this to say, she enjoyed those last 27 years. And so miracles do happen. In the Course in Miracles, that's the one thing I retained when I did the course. And that is that a miracle is an expression of love. And so for God, it is as common his language, miracles, as for us it is to talk about human language. So what is a miracle to us? It's simple... way of doing to God, but we need to be sincere. And when there is a communion, a connection between the soul and God, miracles do happen. And it happens at the physical body, at the physical level, mental level. So, you know, it's you meet the right people. And just like I did, I met Brigitte Mars.
Well, and, you know, here is one more question from the board, you guys, that we've had, and that is about oxygen water. Do you have any thoughts about oxygenated water and the process of oxygenating water, and is that helpful or not?
It's not, you know, I know people who are into it. I drink, you know, spring water that comes in glass, and I haven't really been into buying anything that's in a plastic bottle in quite a while. So I don't know about that. I've seen all kinds of things out there with water, but I feel like getting fresh spring water from up high in a pristine mountain that is being delivered in glass is probably the best I can do. We also have a water filter on our house. I also have a distiller in the basement, and I don't use it that much. And sometimes after it's rained for a few days, I put buckets out on the porch and collect rainwater, which I believe is probably something special. My grandmère was a big believer in folk medicine, and she would collect the rainwater and use it for,
yeah,
you know, special formulas. She even said, May is the month of the mother, of the Virgin Mary. I use it to wash my face for beauty. So I loved all her old folk remedies, and it was certainly an inspiration to me. But maybe Diane knows more about oxygenated water. I haven't gotten into it.
Well, it is a subject that I don't want to get into right now because there are pros and cons, and it would require a long discussion about that because it may seem great at first, but at the same time there are cautions, important cautions to apply. And I prefer what you said, Brigitte. You know, it's in the quality of the water. Again, it's staying as close as possible to nature. Man is trying to do to intervene in the natural forms of food, of whether it's solid, liquid, or gas, you know. But what about trying to do the opposite, to go back to as clean a possible way to how nature presented it, you know. There's energized water depending on the source of where it comes from. There is, I just found out, there's a friend of mine, you know, Paula, this reader from Urantia Book Reader, who came to visit me, and I have a friend in Europe who literally does, well, Jesus and God do miracles through him. He has a hand that is exceptional with his energy, his vortex of energy. But I also found out that the water he uses is a special water, and in the book I mentioned, Water and Salt, there's an incredible story about the importance of water, the quality of water. If people want to know about oxygenated water, read Water and Salt, and it will tell them a lot of answers. And it's in the vortex, in the energy, how deep it comes from the earth. Has it been manipulated a lot? Does it have, like, is the alignment of the molecules correct to enter the body and do as little damage as possible? There's also the source. One thing we have not talked about, and that's very important, you know, we have the, how do you call that, the divine line? You have the North Hemisphere and the equator. Okay, we have the equator on the planet. And so above the equator, all energies turn within a certain cycle. And below the equator, it turns, the vortex turns the other way. The simplest example is bath water. If you run a bath and you let go of the water, in North America, it will turn spin a certain way, and it will spin the opposite way below the equator. Well, our cells are aligned with a certain spin, and when we eat food that comes from South America, from very, very low below the equator, it is not the best food for our body, for our cells, because it turns the spin of our cells. And this is why, again, respecting the order that creation, that Mother Nature, that Eve, all this has put food there for those people, it's like eating bananas in winter. You don't eat bananas in winter in North America. It makes the blood cold. Why? Because banana is a tropical fruit, and it's for those black people that have hot blood, and it cools the blood. Well, don't eat a banana up north in the winter. You're going to get like, you're going to have shivers. So those are all important things to know, and keep the spin of your cells correct, and the minerals to eat in the area local. Like Brigitte said, it is so important to eat local because it contains the minerals that the people of that area need. So with all this transportation, import, export of food around the world, sometimes we are harming the body, and that's why we react with allergic situations, you know, because we're not doing the best, even though we mean good, the result is not the best. Just thought of saying that.
And you know, you guys, we are down to 5 minutes. I can't believe it. This is such a great show. I just love listening to you both. You are just both a fount of information and knowledge on your subjects. You're so, you know, you're experts, what can I say? And it's always enlightening for me to confer with either of you. And you know, I have a great deal. When I had ovarian cancer back in the 90s, I asked Brigitte and what I should do, and she turned me on to a book about macrobiotics, which is what you've just been talking about, Diane. Eat foods that are grown locally, eat foods that are balanced, balance your foods between yin and yang. You know, a lot of this stuff is just so common sense, but I think, getting back to where we started, I think we've convenienced ourselves to death. It's whatever's easy, grab it, tear it open, stuff it in
your
face. And there's another natural food person who, out of Northern California, I wish I could think of her name. She was on Bill Maher the other night. She calls it slow foods,
mm-hmm.
Not fast foods, slow foods. You probably both know about her. I can't. And she is on this the same thing, you know, what you grow, what you can buy, what's organic at a farmer's market, you know, that isn't fast, but it isn't hard. It's slower, but it's better. It's worth it. It's worth the effort because it just restores your body and soul. And,
you know, Paula, to what you're saying, there's one little thing I would like to leave a thought. One day I was praying and meditating, and I became conscious that the food we eat, our body is like a processing factory. And if people would all look at the food they eat, and when they take it to their mouth, it's a sacred act, and look at it and realize, my body, I become every food I eat. I'll tell you, there's many choices that we would leave aside. All of the junk food, everything, it becomes a question of respect because we are processing that food. So whether we eat raw or quality food, just like our thought, let's start to have certified organic thoughts so that we can be beings of quality. So it's the same thing. We process food, we process our thoughts, and we become those foods. So why not put quality food? It's like gas for a car. You wouldn't put gas with mayonnaise and ketchup and mustard in it. So the food for the body should be food for the body without the junk in it and all those artificial products and you know, stuff that makes your body go like a car that has gas with mayonnaise in it. It would run crazy.
Yeah, exactly. It wouldn't run at all. Oh, well.
It's been such a joy, Brigitte, to
thank
share.
Thank you so much. And if I could say one last thing, I would just remind everyone to learn more about your environment, to make a bigger commitment to do something more than you're already doing to take care of it, to take better care of your body. Rather than spraying the weeds, be like Jesus and learn the names of them. And you'll probably find out that they are allies that have served humanity, millions of people for thousands of years.
Brigitte, if someone wanted to consult with you, what's the best way for them to do that? We're getting questions.
They can, people call to make phone consultations or they can email me. If you go to my website, BrigitteMars.com, you'll find my phone number and my email address. I do not do email consultations, but we can at least pick a time and consult. And then, you know, a lot of it is written in the books. I've written 14 books
on natural medicine, Beauty by Nature, Addiction Free Naturally, the Sexual Herbal, Rossum. So I am here to serve. That is my prayer every day. I'm so grateful for the Urantia revelation, and I am just so grateful. Thank you, Paula and Dion, for this opportunity to share our passions and to be better citizens, cosmic citizens.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to say one thing, Paula, to your listeners. I witnessed one of Brigitte's class. I don't know if you remember Brigitte. And I can say to people, if they see in their city advertise a lecture or conference by Brigitte Mars, they should go because you are so alive. I was marveling at looking at you, Brigitte. You were so, I thought you were really happening because you were so lively. As opposed to being theoretical, you were living it. As you were speaking, we could see that you were the living proof of what you were talking. And that, to me, was important.
Okay, and before we end real quick, I want to remind everybody that Anne is going to have Bay Sarmast on her show on Wednesday. Brigitte, you know Bay Zodberg.
I love Bay's. Oh, I love him.
This guy is just brilliant, and he led an expedition to find the Garden of Eden. He's an amazing human being. He's got his own work going on right now, and he's a scholar of the Urantia book. And so tune in on Wednesday with Anne and Behzad Sarmast. And thanks again, Brigitte and Deanna. It was a wonderful show. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Thank you,
Many
Brigitte.
Blessings.
What a
Thank
wonderful
you.
Guest you are.
Thank you so
Many
much.
Blessings.
Bye-bye.
God
Thank
bless.
You.
Thanks for listening, friends. See you again next week on the Cosmic.
Bye, Paula.
Bye, Deanne. Love you, my dear.
Love you, too. Thank you for asking me to co-host with you.
Of course. Thank you for doing it. It was fabulous.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, darling.
Bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember,
Hello.